This is Barbara Glickstein for HealthCetera, and today it's going to be a HealthCetera news update. A few weeks ago, I received an invitation to attend a fundraiser to pass the New York State ERA. I kind of scratched my head. Don't we have an ERA in New York State already? Well, I may be like you. I was wrong. We do not. But you will see the New York ERA on the ballot this November to change the New York State Constitution. Here's what's currently in New York State. It does prohibit discrimination based only on race and religion, but the ERA would expand these protections, including to ensure that all New Yorkers have the right to make decisions about their own bodies, including whether to have an abortion. This is apparently the culmination of years of effort to get the ERA on the ballot, and post-Dobbs, the time has come to really enshrine protections currently missing in New York State, leaving New York State and its citizens vulnerable to potential federal legislation or potentially a future Republican rule in New York State. I do have to say that I was really surprised again. I think the timing of this amendment could not be more critical. We have the state constitution is not adequately ensuring my equality and your equality. These protections for many individual groups are being dissolved around the country, especially since the reversal of Roe v. Wade and the recent Alabama Supreme Court ruling that would have held in vitro fertilization providers subject to criminal prosecution. As I've reported here before on HealthCetera, I follow the news on reproductive health and justice very closely. So if you're also still wondering, the question of doesn't New York already have an ERA and is this an expansion of rights? It's the first can be answered simply no, as I stated just a moment ago, and nowhere are these protections delineated in the Constitution. Yes, New York has these anti-discrimination laws. The New York Human Rights Law prohibits discrimination on the basis of age, race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation, military status, marital status or disability, and employment, housing, education, credit, and access to public accommodations. And as you recall, the New York Reproductive Health Act, which was passed in 2019, and back in 2011, the Marriage Equality Act prohibited discrimination. These are all protections that are codified laws in New York State, but there is no constitutional protection. This means that a judicial review of any alleged discrimination under these categories of gender, gender identity, sex, age, disability can be based on the scrutiny, a lower standard than provided by a constitutional protection. And while laws can be altered each legislative session, any amendment to New York's Constitution must follow the constitutionally mandated complicated path the ER has traveled to the ballot. So I've been around long enough, maybe some of you have too, when we didn't pass an equal rights amendment in the United States. And I, for one, will be following this closely and in the ballot box, be voting to protect my rights. Look for the ballot information. November's not that far away. And I was happy that I got this invitation so I could share this with you. Regrettably, I won't be able to attend the fundraiser, but I did put my name on follow-ups on anything going on. As you all know, the next couple of days are the end of the legislative session, and there are some other key issues that I wanted to share with you on this HealthCetera news update. One of them is also a little personal. I think I've probably mentioned here before that I have two grandchildren. One of them's in kindergarten. She's 5. She will be turning 6 shortly. And in confidence, because kids talk to their grandparents about things sometimes they don't tell their parents, not for any other reason than we sit quietly, often undistracted from all the challenges parents have, working parents have. Not that they don't have those important conversations with them too, but this one came up around a child in the class has a smartphone and takes it out periodically and checks the phone. On a school bus ride recently to a farm, my grandchild sat next to this child who took out the phone and was watching videos. Now, if you know anything about kids and screens, they're going to watch too. until what this child, my grandchild, shared with me was, I don't know, they got a little scary, Bubby. She calls me Bubby. So I didn't look anymore and I looked out the window. I, of course, gave this update to my daughter, her mom, who is investigating what the school policy is on phones in school. I looked up New York City School Board of Education cell phone policy, and apparently it's up to each individual school. I'll give you a follow-up when I have more information on the personal side of this issue. But it just so happened this week that banning smartphones in schools is something that Governor Kathy Hochul is considering. So I'm wondering, will this generation move back to the flip phone? How many of you remember having your first flip phone? Now, seriously, this ban is part of her addressing the mental health of our youth in the state. They will be grappling with this issue. There is research that kind of supports both sides. One says it's not just the smartphone. Others say it is definitely contributing to mental health distress, depression, anxiety, etc. I looked at a bunch of different research and basically couldn't tell you what's the one that stands out strongest. Governor Hochul last week said she believes that smartphones should not be available to students during the school day. So this will, these two bills will be this bill on ending school use of cell phones will be taken up in January legislative session. As you know, the end of our legislative session is this week, and they'll have the summer off and come back, and this will come back up in January. If it's passed, we will be only the second state after Florida to put this kind of restrictions in place. Connected to this is another strong stance that Governor Hochul has in her commitment to address the mental health of New York State youth, and that's a tougher stance on social media. So if she bans the smartphones completely and internet use from schools, this will also be addressed. But if that doesn't move forward exclusively, there are two other bills that are being looked at. One, which will be looked at this week, one is called Stop Addictive Feeds Exploitation or the Safe for Kids Act, and that will restrict the addictive algorithm features of social media. And the other is the New York Child Data Protection Act to restrict the collection of minors' personal data by online sites. So, for example, it would prohibit social media platforms like the popular TikTok and Instagram from showing addictive feeds to users under the age of 18. Probably all of us are familiar, whether we're on TikTok or Instagram, if you look at a pair of red shoes on Monday morning, by Monday afternoon, your feed ad is filled with shoes the color red. So these kind of addictive feeds are based on algorithms, and they show minors content designed to keep them on the app longer, just like if you were still looking for those red shoes. So the platforms would be required to only show posts from accounts the user follows, and it would be in chronological order unless a parent or guardian consents to the algorithm. Now, again, this is for users under the age of 18. The second bill I mentioned would prevent those same companies, TikTok, Instagram, I'm sure YouTube would get thrown in there, from collecting or selling data about underage users. So they hope to reach a deal. They were unable to do so during the budget process in April. And as of this morning, I had not seen any further discussion of how this bill is in being discussion. You're not surprised to hear that tech organizations, like one in particular I read called Tech NYC, whose clients include Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, and Google, which owns YouTube, they've been raising concerns about these measures. I'll read a quote by Marjorie Velasquez, Tech NYC's Vice President of Policy. And she said the organization, quote, supports the mission to protect children's safety online, end quote. But she did add that Governor Hochul and lawmakers have yet to answer some serious questions about the bills. How do they intend to implement age verification while still protecting users' privacy, particularly for those who don't have government IDs? So I'm wondering whether parental consent and knowing what, in fact, your those you're responsible for, whether your children or a guardian of those children, would give you permission. Some of the studies I read around smartphone use in kids had an incredibly high number, less than 50%, but almost 40% of parents who actually look at their kids' cell phones to see what they're looking at. They look at the history of search, and if they can get into the phone's logins on social media sites, some of which have been demanded by parents, they get to see what their kids are looking like. I know myself, I have to put my phone away and out of reach. I'm aware of the my own use, overuse of looking at my phone, and I do have concerns. Whether the research shows it or not, I certainly in the last few months have talked to school nurses about what's it like for kids in school with these phones. They said it's out of control. One story I'll repeat, I interviewed a school nurse who was seeing a young student come in with complaints of a stomach ache. It was a female. And she asked her, what's going on? Are you under particular stress? Or has anybody in your family had a bug, stomach bug lately? And after creating a conversation and feelings of trust, the young girl told her that she broke up with her boyfriend. Well, a situation many of us have lived through and survived through. And she said, well, how long have you been dating him? And she said, just like 3 weeks. And the school nurse then went on to not diminish her feelings of hurt and loss, but asked how it happened. And she said, by text. And then she discovered a little bit further on in the conversation that in fact they had physically never met face to face. They went to the same high school, it was a large high school, but they never sat next to each other, looked into each other's faces, and had a conversation. This was 3 weeks of a relationship by text. So maybe putting the cell phones away or locking them in the locker and ensuring a safer school environment by addressing some other issues instead of normalizing what we see right now, including gun safety issues, maybe there would be some more face-to-face human contact, human relationship building. So I've given some strong point of view in this Health Center news update, but these are issues that touch all of us, and I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about the current situation of cell phones in school? This is Barbara Glickstein for HealthCetera.